going to talk a little golf. We're going to be joined by some guests. I saw Coach Pat Jones, Coach Nutt, Houston. Coach Dennis, not understand, is out here, too. We just talked to Kevin McReynolds, who's out playing right now. We'll get them all on the show at some point throughout the day. We'll also talk about stupid Cavaliers of Virginia ruining our weekend in the world of baseball. We'll talk about Mike Slive's comments last week in Destin. I'm sure you guys talked about it some. And our girl Stacey Lewis back to numero uno, my man.
After what a big victory this weekend. Really should be celebrated a lot more than
these ladies over here are very excited about Stacey.
Well, you need
Lewis.
To. Well, here's the reason why. Because we have not had an American female golfer. This is her second time at number one.
Yep.
Think about it. Who was the last one that you could think of that really was on the scene? Nancy Lopez?
Annika Sorenstam.
She's Swedish.
Oh, okay. I just like to claim her.
Swedish. I would like to claim her too, but we can't, unfortunately. So when you see what Stacey Lewis is doing, considering how you turn the TV on, it seems like Asian females are dominating every single golf tournament you've ever seen.
Meanwhile, in men's golf, Asian players are now dominating there.
I know, huh? I'm happy for Kevin Na.
Why? Because he got runner-up?
Well, because the guy is...
How about Matsuyama?
Remember he had his yips and all that stuff? Everything he went through?
Oh, he's like us. He has the great and the bad.
But his case of the yips was, if you remember some of the videos of watching it, it was the most incredible thing I've ever seen. Like, he pretend he's going to hit it and pull his thing back.
I know.
Pretend he's going to hit it and pull his club back.
It's like Chuck Knobloch at second base back in the day when he had that mental Knobloch. Couldn't throw it to first.
If your name is Knobloch and you want a second baseman or a catcher, you're just not doing life the way you should be doing it.
There's no question.
Knobloch.
The Matsuyama story is amazing. He's 22. He's a rising star. First win in the States. And I've never seen this before, ever. He birdied 18 all four rounds. First time it's ever happened in the Memorial. The last one he birdied got him into the playoff after he had broken his driver, smacking it down on the ground. I mean, that's so us. I can relate to this guy. That's the one thing we have in common. But I've never seen a guy birdie one hole four times in a round ever. I honestly never have, because you know they always show, you know, birdie, par, bogey, or whatever he did the first three. I've never seen a guy birdie at all 4 days, any hole, let alone the 18th.
And after he broke that driver, did you hear the crowd getting on him?
Yeah.
Come on, Matsuyama. You're better than that.
I heard one little slappy.
I'm like, well, really? Is he better than that? What did he do?
How about a slap in the face for Kevin Na? The kid comes back and wins the first playoff hole with a 3-wood off the tee. Maybe Na should hit a 3-wood off the tee because he yanked one into the woods.
I saw it when Na finished, and he threw up a 64 last round, which he came on the broadcast with those guys after and said, I thought 64 would win it. He said that when I heard Jack Nicklaus say yesterday at the end of the broadcast that 5-under had a chance, that's when I thought he had a chance. Watching that interview, to me, it felt like he already felt like his day was over, and he felt okay and satisfied with even coming in third or fourth. And so when he did get back out there, I didn't think he's going to have a chance.
Well,
he hit it right in the water.
Yeah, you sit around for 2 hours. It's hard to stay.
But I think mentally he was satisfied.
Yeah.
Like, for him, he was cool with not even having to go back out there and finish it in the top five or whatever it was.
You know what I'd like to start doing? When somebody's off for a week, I'd like to start doing like a top five recap, like the top five things I missed while I was out. Matty T, feel free to jump in here. Next time you're off, we'll do that.
I can't think of anything right now.
What were the big things that came out of the SEC? You know, I was actually in Destin last week, but didn't really participate. I did run into who's the writer from the lawyer?
Joe Schroeder?
No. Clay Travis. He was was at this little restaurant that we were sitting in.
Thank you, boss.
And but I didn't talk to him because he was getting ready to do a show.
Well, allow me to catch you up.
Yeah, what were some of the big high points that came out of that deal?
Well, one of the things that we talked about was autonomy. And autonomy to the layman like us, we're like, hey, autonomy. But really, it was the biggest story. Just the issue was nothing really decidedly came out of it, right? They know what they want to do. And basically, I think they just wanted to tighten up their strategy so when they approached the NCAA – and be like, hey, we don't need you guys anymore. We're going to do our own thing. Is that cool? Because here's our strategy. Here's our plan. See, you wouldn't want to be you. So that was the biggest one. But the one that got the most play was the early signing period. That was like the biggest. If there was something that was something that everybody was talking about, was the early signing period with the coaches.
What were the details on that?
Unanimously, according to Les Miles, the coaches want to move up the early signing date to like, I think even August or sometime like in December, the ADs.
August or December, that's a huge range.
Well,
you mean September?
No, there was like two different dates.
Like totally different windows?
totally different windows.
So right after, I guess, the football season ends, or right before it begins would be the
right.
point. Right.
Coaches want the earliest.
I would say, yeah, right before, because that thing, that way, if I'm a senior and I say, look, I know I'm going to Arkansas. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be bothered by all these dudes. I want to be able to focus on my senior season, enjoy it. I don't want to be recruited. I don't want to be bothered. I'm signing with Arkansas now. I love that.
That's what I said. That's what I thought.
We're talking about football, right?
Talking about football.
Right.
And most coaches are in favor of some sort of an early signing period.
The proposal from
the SEC involves the Monday following Thanksgiving. Now, like the ACC, for instance, I believe they may have or are trying to push through like August, which, yeah, if you're an ACC team and you can get early commitment or signing from a kid.
Well, the SEC's not going to lose out very often, but my thing is, for the kid's sake, if I can just imagine, well, I can't imagine, but let's say theoretically I had a kid that was a high-profile athlete. I mean, again, it's a drain on the whole family because it's a total distraction.
Listen, I agree with you.
You know how it is. I mean, it's time-consuming, sifting through it, thinking. But if you're 100% committed, you know exactly where you want to go. There is no reason to think about or deal with any of that crap. It's like, look, I've already signed. Let me be.
And here's the one thing that you heard from the ADs and the presidents that came
biggest Turbis tumble I've ever had in my life. This thing's like 64 ounces. I can drink a lot of water out of that. Thank you.
I don't know how much their deal is. Okay, if we make an early signing period, let's just say if it's a month, 2 months, whatever it is from the date it is now, that is going to push everything back. Now you have coaches who typically didn't have to recruit earlier in the summer or during the college football season. To me, I think that's just a lot of smoke and mirrors, and because I don't know how it – I think if the coaches feel best and they want to do it, fine. The other thing that came out was, of course, Will Muschamp said he doesn't want to play any more FCS opponents. No more. No more on the docket.
Oh, that's
he
sad.
Doesn't because they lost to Georgia Southern, obviously.
Right.
And he goes on to say –
well, you shouldn't play good FCS teams. If you're going to play an FCS team, don't play an elite FCS team that's about to go to FBS.
Well, what do you think? He goes on to say that it's – doesn't do anything to help the fans. They're not interested in any of that. And also, he made a point of a strength of schedule situation where you get some of these FCS teams on your schedule, and now if you've got a committee that's selecting a 14 playoff, that takes strength of schedule into effect, and you only have 12 regular season games to prove who you are, why are you going to waste one of those? Even if you don't lose, you might as well be playing against a bunch of skeletons out there.
As an FBS fan, I think it makes sense. I certainly appreciate what he's saying, and I can agree with what his position is. However, as a guy who supports FCS schools like UAPB and UCA, I hate to see that opportunity. Because I'm telling you, as a broadcaster, as a coach, as a player, as a fan,
aren't you getting
the
TV
opportunity
this year,
to
right?
go?
Texas Tech,
yeah,
you guys getting on TV.
And bro, we've been to Ole Miss. They got Oklahoma State on the schedule already.
But Fox Sports is airing that UCA at Texas Tech game. Correct?
Okay, I don't know, but my point is that it's such an unbelievable. Last year they went to Colorado. I mean, Pat, it's such a great thrill for FCS programs, and they can survive. But it is unbelievable how big the boon is financially for these schools. The Hawaii trip was basically, I don't remember how much money, but they got basically all their expenses covered plus a check. And that's just, again, it's a huge benefit for where normally you go on the road and you're eating all the costs. So in fact, if they play like a Tennessee Martin or somebody who's an FCS school and they go on the road, they're having to, you know, basically eat all the road costs. In this case, you're going to come out making money for the university. Basketball programs, we see it all the time. You make your money by playing those bigger schools. Basketball's
right.
different because everybody's Division One, but you make your nut. You look at UAPB, they play like 10 of those games, and you could make the argument maybe that's too many.
Mm-hmm.
But, they're funding the whole basketball program and then some probably by playing North Carolina and going and getting your heads beat in for a month.
You're right where it has to be. Okay, I understand. I get it from his point of view. It's a lose-lose in a lot of ways for Florida, especially when they lose to Georgia Southern.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be there's so much upside to it where you talked about the money that could be made. There has to be some kind of a formula or understanding from the committee that these games need to be played and they need to be viewed as such.
I don't like the rule, though. I don't like making it a rule. It's sort of like certain hot topic political issues. I don't know that I want to make a law about it, but I have certain feelings about it. I don't want to make a rule about this, but I think the Floridas, the Texases, the Arkansas even of the world should probably not be playing FCS schools. I do think schools like Vanderbilt, Kentucky, Iowa State. I mean, I could name off 25 others off the top of my head if you had the time. We got better things to do. Could make a very valid argument for playing FCS schools every year, and it's still a great thrill for those schools to go to play FBS opponents. The money's still good. And the other thing is, if you're an FBS team, it's a lot cheaper than bringing in a Division I FBS team as a road team and paying them what you got to pay them.
I'm fine.
If you're not doing a home and home.
Okay, some of the other things that
But tell me about this this Division IV Mike's life threatened.
Oh, Division IV, yeah. That was something where it kind of came out at the end of the week. And almost like slipped it in there where it has the same thing goes back to if they can develop basically their own rules, their own division, be Division IV. I don't know what
if they don't get their way. What he should call it, though, because it gives the wrong mentality, because two is different than three. Two can give scholarships. Three can't give any money. Four would indicate you're going the other way. What you should call it is Division Zero.
Because, I like that.
Because you're
like
you're actually going up from Division One. It's like the elite of the elite.
Division Four, yeah, it's a little clunky. DIV.
Yeah, you're going the wrong way. I mean, you're basically Division Zero. You're basically one plus, or call it one plus. I have no problem with that. Division Four is a stupid name for it. Anyway, we can get into the nomenclature later. But the point is,
like,
hey,
four.
Nomenclature. Did you get that? Write that down, Kev. Put me on the board. I'm down 9-2.
He's back.
Anyway, my point is, I like the concept of it. If I don't get my way, and this is to what you've said. Don't give me this garbage about how you can't pay and you can't do this and everybody has to be the same. You can do it different. I say for just football and for just the Big Five, I can make an argument that there should be extra benefit. I have no problem with that. If you make it specific to those schools who are playing on a completely different level and platform than everybody else.
And that wouldn't affect the other schools. It's not like you're competing against the same. If your school's competing against certain kids, allow those schools to do what they need to do.
The Sun Belts of the world, the WAC of the world, those schools, look, you're not winning recruiting battles against SEC, ACC 95% of the time anyway. So having that debate is a waste of everyone's time.
Yes.
With all due respect to Terry Mahajer and all the great ADs and that level of football, if you're outside the Big Five, they're playing a different deal. And the thing is, maybe still, I mean, look, even despite all that, if you have an elite year and you go undefeated and you knock off maybe a major FBS team a couple of times, you're going to have a chance to get in that Final Four.
That's the thing, though, Justin. When you're, if a student athlete decides to go to a smaller school versus a bigger SEC school, they go to a Sun Belt school over an SEC school now, it's because of other issues that most likely have nothing to do with.
True.
You know, whether it's proximity to family, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, just a couple of small things. Also from the SEC spring meetings, Bill Hancock, this is the most surprising thing to me. He was the executive director of BCS, right?
Right.
Was everybody upset with the BCS?
No, not everybody. No. There are a lot of people who think it worked fine. And I think generally speaking, it probably did okay.
Well, he's the executive director of the college football playoff now.
Oh, okay.
Which.
That is odd.
I mean, how about that on your resume?
What does the executive director do versus what Jeff Long does?
I asked that question last week to everybody, and nobody really could give me an answer.
We need to schedule Jeff Long this week. Matty T, Pat Bradley, I put it on you. We got to get Jay Long on this week because I need him to recap all this. He can be J-Lo for us. I need him to recap the week.
I'll send him a tweet.
Or just send him a text. You know what? Better yet, don't do it publicly because nobody's listening to the show. That's not like public.
So Bill Hancock says there will be no playoff expansion looming. It's going to be four teams for the 12 years.
I got no problem with that.
SEC basketball tournament in St. Louis. SEC basketball tournament in St. Louis 2018 and Tampa Bay 2025.
Oh, gosh. Come on. Where's it going to be the other years?
Nashville.
All the whole time?
Yeah, every year.
Except, I like St. Louis, okay.
I
really do.
Yeah.
Tampa.
I mean, we talk about Tampa.
Why is it the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and not just the Tampa, Florida Buccaneers or Tampa Buccaneers?
I don't know. Tampa.
The city's not called Tampa Bay. It's called Tampa.
I don't know. What's so great about Tampa?
I don't know. I've never heard anybody say they're going. Actually, I've heard a lot of people say they're going to vacation to Tampa.
Ewok City. What is it called? Ewok City? What is it down there?
I don't know.
It's like a little area. Anyway, the other thing from the basketball is this. They've decided to have three permanent they're not going to have 1-4-8 conference schedule. You just have one permanent.
Right.
Home and home. It's going to be three.
I got to say, the ambient sound with those birds in the background is just lovely.
You like
that?
Isn't it pretty?
It really is.
I would say this here at Hurricane, that there's some beautiful flowers. What are those, Pat? Any idea?
Oh, those are azaleas.
Those are not azaleas.
Those are daisies.
They look like buttercups. I don't know what that's. I'm not.
Fill me up, buttercup.
I don't have. Woo! I'm not good with foliage and any sort of plant stuff. I can tell you corn from soybeans, but that's about the extent of my abilities.
Okay. The other thing from last week, one of many, was that the L.A. Clippers sold for $2 billion.
That I saw. That's only like four times what my expectation was. And if you're an NBA owner right now, are you not going, I think maybe we should put this up for sale?
My whole question, though, Justin, is the Clipper, that whole situation was unique. Here's how I imagine the conversation going.
Okay.
You're Adam Silva, and let's just say there's a...
Does he live in his mother's basement, or does he just look like JK? Okay.
And there's another handful of NBA owners who clear... And the other interesting thing is Mark Cuban said on TNT he wasn't sure how the vote he would vote in this whole Donald Sterling deal. He said he's not sure how he would vote. He wants to hear all the information, which was kind of strange to me because I figured it was a foregone conclusion. So anyway, here's how I imagine going. Adam Silva had heard who was interested in buying the Clippers. Basically, I believe that there was a few groups that submitted their bid to buy the Clippers. I can imagine Adam Silva said, guys, please, they will not sell for anything below X amount of dollars. We'll do anything we can, any incentive you want. Overpay for this sucker. Just give them what they want, period, and we will make sure that you're a successful team. Even Steve Ballmer, who, interesting enough, you know the tie in with him?
Yeah, he's the guy that tried to move
Sacramento to Seattle.
Right.
So I don't know.
He's a sick basketball fan. He's a deranged basketball fan with more money than sense. Obviously, he's a smart guy. He wouldn't be in the position he's in and wouldn't have made as much money as he's made. But my point is, that is an obscene amount of money for a guy who didn't give a crap and has more money than he needs. So he's like, $2 billion, whatever, no big deal. If he had offered $1.5 billion, that's still a gross overpayment. But my point is, at the end of the day, and I don't know how many people have that kind of money and are grossly overcompensated for their sense, their level of sense.
Right.
But what are the Celtics worth? What are the Lakers worth? What are the New York Knicks worth, Pat? I mean, that's my question.
The Lakers
are worth
$900 million.
No, they're not, man.
Oh,
that's the point. If the Clippers are worth $2 billion, the Lakers are worth $3
billion. They're worth whatever somebody will pay for.
They're worth $2.9 billion. The Celtics are probably worth $4 billion. I mean, it's insane.
I don't know how much the recent
Well,
I don't know how much the recent controversies have added to what it is. I don't think you can look at it now and say every NBA team. I mean, the Cowboys.
The last sale was $550 million or something, and that was the highest ever.
Bucks. Milwaukee Bucks.
And that's a suck, terrible organization.
Yeah, it is. I can't believe that they were the highest. That just goes to show you that it's not inflation. A lot of
that's like
sales,
ticket sales
going
at the,
on.
Well, it's like ticket sales at the box office. I mean, if the Bucks are the highest ever before this time, I mean, it shows you how much we've inflated.
I think that's what it was paid for, $2 billion. I don't think that's the value of it.
Oh. You guys probably didn't talk about
this last
week.
Can't be the value.
Do you know who the biggest winner in this whole thing was?
Let me guess.
Not Steve Ballmer.
Viv Stiviano.
Nope. She's not. Not Ballmer. Not the Clippers, not the fans, not even Adam Silver in the NBA. You know who the biggest winner is?
What can I guess?
Go ahead. I'll give you one guess. I'll give you one guess and Matty T one guess. The biggest winner in the whole exchange of ownership in L.A.
Cliff Paul.
Incorrect. Matty T.
Just tell me.
Why don't you just tell me who the biggest winner is? The United States government.
Oh, yeah, I know, right?
Okay. $650 million in capital gains will be paid by this transaction. Okay, so all I know is this. Of the 1.4 left, I'm sure they're just as happy as they can be with that.
Mm-hmm.
But think about that. You make a $2 billion transaction, and you're the owner. You're like, sweet, $2 billion. What are my taxes? $636 million. What? $630 million. Rolled into the tax revenue that you are not anticipating as a government when you're budgeting. Not that they budget. They just spend until they're tired of spending and go, we'll pay for it someday.
Do you know how quickly the government spends that money?
I'm telling you,
we send $300 million to the Sudan every year.
My point is this. If we sold like five NBA franchises every year, we could almost cut the national debt significantly
down.
I realize it's such an overwhelming number. My goodness. That's $600 million you weren't expecting to have. I mean, that'd be like you going in your account and going, I mean, obviously it's a drop in the bucket, but it'd be like you finding, like, say, $3,000 or $4,000 in your account you weren't expecting.
Right.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
To me, it would be.
Yes, it is. I think on the scale of the government's money versus my money, it's probably more like 60 cents.
Okay, good. It's probably true. It's probably true.
Although I'd like to, hey, 60 cents, I'll take it.
Yeah, no question.
I've never turned down 60 cents
in
my life. Never turned down in my life. So that was part of what we did. And then, of course, we...
The normal stuff?
Normal stuff. Of course, baseball, NBA playoffs.
We're going to talk about that. The NBA finals are set. We got a rematch. Don't call it a rematch. I've been here.
We did our ad-libs.
Actually, it is,
you know, those types of things.
Oh, I love the ad-libs. Chipping in for
Arkansas. I
thought
those were just natural... things you brought up.
Those are content, part of the
spelling
shows.
Spelling bee.
Yeah, it just comes up in conversation.
First tie in history.
My trip to Destin, by the way, fantastic. Thanks for asking.
Hey, by the way, yeah, how was it?
I had a great time. We ate great food. I had the perfect mix. I had one day at the beach where it was calm as it could be, the most beautiful crystal clear water you've ever seen, nice little light breeze,
oh, nice.
87 degrees. Then another day, the last day we went to the beach, red flags. And it was the
Sharks?
Best. No. Red flags because the waves. Oh. Best boogie board I've ever been a part of. It was incredible.
You were boogie boarding?
Oh, it was incredible. Incredible. Like 8-foot, 10-foot breakers. It was amazing.
Wow. Surf's up, dude.
I know. It was awesome. I wish I could surf. It would have been a good day for it. But anyway, we are here at Hurricane Golf and Country Club in Bryan, Arkansas. It's all benefiting the Arkansas Health Center down in Haskell. And some of the celebrities that are out here today, I've already seen Coach Nutt and Coach Pat Jones. Pat Bradley's on the list of celebrities. Larry Lacewell is here. Kenny Hatfield is here, I am told. Billy Moore and Jim Moody, a couple of Pleasant Valley favorites and occasional.
He's not Moody.
What?
He's not Moody at all.
Jim Moody is a former great Razorback and a current great golfer. He's a mean stick, that guy. Don't be fooled. Is Roger Scott playing today? He's on the list.
That would be awesome.
Huh.
He needs to.
Anthony Lucas is supposed to be out here, too. Where is he? Anyway, so we'll visit with some of these guys coming up through the day. Anyway, we appreciate you tuning in today. Matty T has found a website that says what the Lakers are worth. I'm just saying, Matt, if the Clippers are worth this amount.
Well, in 2009, according to Forbes, that also the Clippers amount apparently also comes from a stadium cost that was $260 million, and then a relocation fee that was $75 million. So actually it would probably be about...
You're talking about a pittance in the scheme of $2 billion. The point is,
I saw online.
That comes with it does not come with the Staples Center, but it comes with the practice facility that they own. Some of these don't.
You know where the practice facility is located?
It's like in Valencia.
Playa Vista, son. Playa Vista. P-L-A-Y-A. How awesome
Playa?
Is that?
I think it's Playa.
I like to call it Playa Vista. Just because I can just imagine what goes on in Dolan Sterling's Playa Vista condo.
Yeah. There's a lot of freaky chicks. My point is, it's just like with the A-Rod contract. When you start paying redonkulous money, it's happened in the NBA too. You basically reset what things are worth. Now, of course, it will only be what the market will bear, and if nobody has $2.8 billion or $3 billion or $5 billion or whatever the Lakers want to charge or whatever next organization up wants to charge, it ain't going to do any good. It's just like a house. You can put it up for $6 million, but if somebody's only willing to pay $4 million for it, that's what it's worth.
I'm just still not convinced that is going to adjust in a big way the values of franchise. I think it was just a one-time deal where
maybe
he said, please, overpay to get this guy out of here.
You make a valid point.
If they didn't overpay for it, the next best scenario was Donald Sterling dies.
But here's my point.
If that didn't happen.
But I would make the argument that the $1.5 billion is way overpaying too, Pat.
Sure.
That's my point. So why did he offer $2
billion? Maybe it had something to do with it. Maybe they understood, hey, because I did hear Donald Sterling
say, I got to pay $600 million in luxury tax. It's going to take $2 billion.
Well, here's the bogus part about it anyway. Bro, you
paid like
$12.5 million for it.
Is that all he paid?
In 81, $12.5 million.
What a great return. I mean, if I could get, you get one return like that.
Can we convince? Oh, and the other news came out of last week, speaking of the NBA, was the incredible story of the Memphis Grizzlies owner challenging Tony Allen to a game of one-on-one. Our buddy Dave Yeager wouldn't allow it to happen. The owner wanted to fire him.
Oh, that's why he started talking to Minnesota?
It was the one of the most bizarre from Sports Illustrated. It was one of the most bizarre owner slash coach player situations I've ever seen.
Two things that are going to happen today. I'm going to find out what these freaking flowers are over here, and we're going to talk to some celebrities.
Petunias.
I don't think they're petunias. I've never seen a yellow petunia. Anyway, we'll take a timeout, and we'll talk more about the Razorback baseball loss yesterday. I think pretty solid season in spite of some setbacks through the year. We're here at Hurricane Golf and Country Club.
We're proud.
Pat Bradley. We're gay. We'll be back. I need you. I need you. What an